I'm Red Scott.
And I'm Ivan Hernandez.
This is Bunker Politics.
I don't even have a fucking thing ready to go because of that's how new this podcast is, guys. I don't even have patter ready to go. That's how fresh these political views are.
The only politics podcast dumb from the bunker where we are just waiting out the next 4 years.
Let me tell you, the walls in this bunker are pretty thin. I don't think they're going to keep out all the chuds, and there's going to be chuds.
Now, I want to thank the listener who gave us critical feedback on the name Bunker Politics. I believe the listener's name is Marissa Stroud, one of our amazing Patreon listeners. And she pointed out that the bunker is where they want you. You've been driven into the bunker, and so she objected to the name. I want to be very clear that this is a very fear-based podcast.
I think this is a very fear-based year, and the next 4 years, I think, will be equally as fear-based.
Right. So I understand where she's coming from. She wants to strike a more hopeful chord. I'm striking. We are down to the bedrock. We've been beaten down further than we ever expected to be.
I feel like this is the studio executive who is like, can you take the strikes out of Empire Strikes Back? It reads a bit aggressive.
Yeah, this is something we're trying to understand our world, trying to understand this terrible situation that we have been thrust into, and the bunker seems like the safest place to
honestly,
do it from.
I don't feel like we've been thrust into it as much as like we've been slowly pushed off of a ledge for the last like year and a half, and we finally got to the point where there's not enough of us standing on the ledge to not fall.
Yeah. So on tap for this episode, we've got the weekly Trump date, we've got cabinet updates, and we have
Linda McMahon, wrestling's own Linda McMahon.
This is breaking just as we're recording this. So tell me about Linda McMahon, Ivan.
Okay, so she is I believe she is Vince McMahon's wife, the mother of Stephanie McMahon. These are all wrestling people, which makes so much sense because so much of what this campaign has been is wrestling. It's theatricality. It's completely fake, but backed up by real people acting as if this is a real thing that's happening at all times. It's kayfabe. It's fucking chair to the back of the head. It's surprises out of nowhere. It's fucking, oh, who's coming down off that ladder? It's James Comey.
I'm so surprised by this, though, seeing as Trump is the first president who has been featured in the WWE ring.
And you can find the video. It's not like he hasn't repeatedly promoted that video of him getting fucking stone cold stunnered.
Yeah, he gets stone cold stunnered. That one's definitely going to be in the show notes. The YouTube video of the president-elect of the United States getting stone cold stunnered.
This truly is going to be the least dignified of all of the American presidencies.
Oh, man, now you make me want to challenge that. The least dignified of all the presidencies.
Okay, and I'm saying that even with Nixon. I'm saying that even with fucking stupid-ass James K. Polk. I'm saying that even with Taft, who got stuck in a fucking bathtub because he was so goddamn obese. This is going to be the least dignified of all of the American presidencies, because all of the previous American presidencies have at least dined to kind of try to aspire to the dignity of the office, even if they were completely shitting on it in reality. But this is going to be the first one where it's very, very outright. Yeah, we don't care about the dignity of the American presidency. Let's fucking get rich, screw some brown people.
That does seem to be the name of the game. So check the show notes if you want to see the video of Trump in the ring of WWE.
We have so many cabinet appointments to go through.
We've got so many. One thing that I wanted to bring up, I forgot to put this on the notes for this week, but I've been thinking a lot about historical corollaries of President Trump. And the obvious ones that people seem to go to are Andrew Jackson, because he's a complete monster.
Psychopath. Terrible person.
And he also ran on a conservative populist campaign. Which is where we have. I do hope that they have a repeat of the Andrew Jackson election party, where a man gets thrown out the window of the White House.
And you know what's going to happen? I can't wait to see all of the actual physical violence that's going to happen in the White House. Because you know what's going to happen.
It will happen. There's going to be some good stories. So Andrew Jackson's a good one. I'm also, and most of this knowledge, by the way, I want to say, is from the wonderful
Presidential Podcast.
Presidential Podcast. James K. Polk famously got through more, almost all of his legislative agenda, like one of the most famous, one of the most successful when judged on fulfilling their campaign promises. And how did James K. Polk achieve it? By lying to everyone, by promising
every single person,
by promising people things to their dumb faces and then just not doing those things. And you could argue that nothing bad ever happened to him as a result of that, but he was only a one-term president. I think it would be hard being a two-term president with that policy, but it does say how much you can get done when you absolutely just choose to ignore the truth as a piece of policy.
Yeah, it is the liar's path. And let me tell you, that liar's path is hard to walk twice.
it's very difficult to walk twice, but you know, we'll see what he tries to do. There's also one of the ones that people bring up all the time, certainly in my Twitter feed, is Trump actually Hitler? Which was a question that I was taking very seriously, and I feel like I know people have brought this up, but I definitely feel like we've burned out the like, oh, George W. Bush is Hitler, Ronald Reagan is Hitler.
He was just,
and then this guy was like, in retrospect, it's like, no, he was just very bad at being president.
Yeah, George W. Bush, I don't want to give the man too much credit because he truly did some fucking awful things.
Nightmarish.
But he at least you can say about the Bush boys that they believe in public service, and they believe in trying to work, if not for the entirety of the American people, at least some of them. And really, if we're going to lay a lot of the blame for the Bush administration at somebody's feet, it should be fucking Cheney's.
Sure. And the point that was driven home that sort of made me breathe a sigh of relief is that that he is not literally Hitler, is the idea that Hitler, despite many similarities, had an ideology that he believed in very deeply. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
enough that
it's not a good ideology.
No,
we'll head that off right there. Wasn't a great ideology.
I'm going to say one of the bottom 10 ideologies of all time.
You know what? I'm going to be very controversial. I'm going to say it's in the bottom five.
From the ideology database, IDB.com. The users have rated that one of the lowest ideologies.
It's pretty low. It's pretty low down there.
And Trump just, you know, like he wrote
he
a book.
He doesn't believe in anything.
I mean, Hitler wrote a book about what he believed while he was in prison. Trump is never going to write a book.
He's wrote a billion books.
No.
Here's the thing, though. They're all ghostwritten and they're all bad.
Right. He's never actually written a book.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You need to look up the story about the Trump fictional novel.
No. When you say fiction or novel, is it like historical fiction about Trump?
No. It kind of, it's a novel about Trump Tower.
Okay.
In which Trump is a character.
Okay.
It's pretty bug fuck.
Okay. I will do so. On some level it's even scarier because you can't predict what he's going to do. He could do almost anything. But a lot of people point to Silvio Berlusconi, who unfortunately I don't know a ton about, aside from
let me tell you, there's a greasy guy.
But those are just some models and thinking about historical analogs of what he could actually do. As far as the Trump date, almost a week ago, Trump during his campaign, we'll start there. He promised the Carrier plant in Indiana, which was going to move all of its jobs to Mexico. A couple thousand jobs. He said, if I become president, they're not going to move their jobs there because I'll tax them if they do. And what happened?
And he did the opposite.
And
they moved a bunch of jobs and he gave them a tax break.
And instead, he has saved some of those jobs, about 1,000 of them, And honestly, as a policy matter, it's fairly cheap. The worst part about it is that it provides a terrible incentive going forward for every company to say, I'm going to go out of the country too. And then he gives them some sort of incentive to keep jobs there. Also, the
unions were cut out of it. The unions were completely cut out of the negotiations. And also, that's in Indiana, and it's basically a it was basically Mike Pence did not give Carrier enough of the tax incentives that they wanted. So fucking later on, once Trump finally got elected, he had to come in and basically clean up his fucking running mate's stupid mess, which he didn't even really do. There's still a bunch of jobs going to Mexico, and they're getting $7 million fucking dollars now.
Right. See, so he's moving.
And of all people to come out against it, Sarah Palin called it crony capitalism. What kind of fucking mirror world ass shit are we in where Sarah Palin, of all people, is coming out against big government interference fucking by the Republic? By the way, I want you to finish your thought because I have an entire fucking thing on Republicans fucking abandoning their long-held tenets purely in the face of trying to make good PR stunts happen.
Well, and so there's going to be like between like 600 to 1,000 jobs that are staying in the United States, but there's a ton that are still going to Mexico. He didn't stop all of the jobs from moving to Mexico. I mean, just to give you an idea, in a standard month, there's millions of jobs lost and millions of jobs gained. In a good month in the United States when the economy is doing well, somewhere in the hundreds of thousands of jobs are being created. So the idea that saving these few jobs doesn't do much, except it gets him a ton of great press. Like he is, it's amazing how the internet is just taking his tweets, putting them into headlines, and then it gets just hundreds, thousands of amazing headlines that give him great press. It's terrifying.
And this is, all of this is insane because it is directly big government interference in the free market, which is the thing Republicans are supposed to hate the most. It's insane what's happening, that they've just abandoned all of their deeply held tenets, which they never deeply held, and goes back to my point about how conservatism is an intellectually bankrupt, dishonest fucking ideology, because they don't care about big government interference. They care about the black guy trying to fucking do shit to save the economy. When Obama fucking came in with that auto bailout, they gave him so much shit. And not only did the American people make money on that deal, fucking it saved 1.5 million jobs. It did exactly like the, I believe somebody said that to equal basically like
he would have to do this every day for 30 years.
That's the one. In order to outpace just the general depreciation of American job loss, he would have to make this deal every week for 30 years.
Yeah, that's what it was. Every week for 30 years.
Yeah, and it's insane.
I have to say that this has been a terrible experience to live through, but it has been a great learning experience for me. Like I've underweighted the importance of the victory lap. Like presidents apparently, like when every week Obama should have started the campaign, when he let a reporter ask a question, he shouldn't have let them speak until they said how many jobs he had saved since the beginning of that press conference.
The aliens who are watching us are having a fucking field day right now.
Oh, man.
They've just got a giant goddamn bucket of popcorn and I'm going to assume pure high fructose corn syrup in a thermos. And they are just enjoying this because it's unprecedented. And every time somebody said, like, I'm still waiting to see how the Electoral College shakes out, because everybody keeps saying, oh, no, the Electoral College isn't going to fucking go hang dog, or it isn't going to vote in Hillary. Motherfucker, how many times have people said that nothing that has happened can't happen? We are in
2016 would be the year for it.
It's the year.
Yeah.
It's the year for crazy shit. So until that motherfucker is it. By the way, ever since Newt Gingrich didn't take a cabinet position, I feel like there's been something that's going to fucking blow up and is going to tear all of this shit down. Because if there is anybody who is more of a fucking craven opportunist than Newt Gingrich, I do not know him.
So the one thing that I would say is not only do I think it's just such an outside chance to hope for the Hamilton electors. Is that what they call them? Which is
and there's also the Texas elector who was like, yeah, I'm going to vote for John Kasich, a principled conservative who's a fucking asshole too.
That doesn't mean he's not a principled conservative. In fact, it strengthens the case.
Actually, it really does. Being a huge asshole is one of the great conservative principles. By the way, side note, Ohio just rammed a 6-week abortion ban through their legislator, and it is now on John Kasich's fucking desk to veto or not veto.
And so, he probably won't.
That's terrible.
Yes, that is terrible.
It's very bad.
Oh, but not only is it, God, I'm so bad with remembering my train of thought. It's not only an outside chance. It's also like, if you're worried about actual physical violence, I mean, there's at least, 64 million people who voted for Trump that if he is not elected, I think some subset of that is going to get very physically violent very quickly. I mean, if you're
really
imagining a world where it's going to be so, like all daisies now that Hillary Clinton's going to be our president. I don't know about that.
Red, the world has already erupted into violence. I believe they have counted, I believe it's what, 1,000 plus hate crimes in the wake of Trump's election. You just don't perceive it because you're not the kind of person who gets yelled at in the street by random weirdos. But it's already happening. The violence is already here.
I think it's going to go to another level. I really do.
Yeah, but the alternative is a greater amount of violence over time, plus an administration which is going to do its best to fucking gut whatever principles liberal America holds dear. I do not believe that we need to fucking keep Trump in as an alternative to a civil war is a good argument, because civil war is going to happen regardless.
I do not think that's the case.
Well, also, Hillary's popular vote count is what, 2.7 million plus now?
Yeah. Yeah, she won the popular vote.
We're the majority.
We're the
majority, Red.
We are the majority. Good for us.
Yeah.
moving on to the Trump date, the weirdest one, I think, of the week, Taiwan.
Okay.
So what happened was President Trump took a call from the president of Taiwan, as he said, which is a huge... That in itself is an inescapable
reversal
policy.
Oh, you can't be saying that. You can't be saying that, man.
Up until this point. So if you're unfamiliar, Taiwan's leadership is basically the former China leadership that left China. I don't know. How many years ago? 60, 70 years ago?
This is crazy because I was randomly reading about Chiang Kai-shek the other day before this all happened. I was like, damn, this Wikipedia truly has prepared me for global politics. basically, it was the Kuomintang who, this is really interesting, right up until the late 10s or so, there were still like regional war. It was still the warlord era of China in which regional warlords basically held the country hostage. So Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang rode through China and killed all of those motherfuckers. Then World War II happened. Then the Kuomintang got pushed out by the communists, and they receded to Taiwan. And basically ever since, Taiwan has existed in a very weird state where China is basically like, you are not an independent country, and we could take you whenever we want to. And Taiwan is like, we understand that you do not acknowledge us as an independent country and can take us whenever you want to. So it's been a weird stalemate, which has been buttressed by everybody not wanting to piss off China over the years. So if you get into the actual naming of the Republic of Taiwan, I believe they refer to themselves, God, I don't even know what the exact names are, because they're very exacting in their phrasing. And you have to address them in certain specific ways, or China gets very mad. One of the Bush aides told what you have to restate before every presidential call to China.
Oh my God! Yeah,
and it's like a paragraph long. we support the one China policy and like da 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 da.
Right. So
that you have to say before any diplomatic talks can take place with them.
So I just want to restate basically what you said. But like we call them Taiwan, but like they call themselves China. They both think they're China and that the other one is some sort of renegade state that's going to come around eventually. Mm-hmm. So in the Olympics, Taiwan is referred to as Chinese Taipei.
Oh, wow. That's old school. That's very old school.
Yeah, yeah. So, if you look at any Olympics competition, maybe you saw that name and didn't know who it referred to, but an international competition.
I'm going to tell you, I did not see any country's names in the Olympics.
Yeah. I enjoy the Olympics.
I was like, oh, this volleyball seems nice. Change channel.
The no president has talked to the leader of Taiwan because they don't want to piss China off. And Trump clearly, it seems pretty clear that his staff arranged for a call to the president of Taiwan, even though he claims that the president on Taiwan called him. And the only thing that this is, it just seems like one of the things most likely to end the world.
Motherfucker, and you wouldn't even guess who the government of Taiwan has been paying to lobby for this call.
Who?
Bob Dole.
That was the weirdest thing.
I honestly never realized how cheap it is to destabilize global politics. They did this for $140,000.
That's less than your average down payment on a one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco.
Honestly, I feel like with 500 grand, you could essentially destroy the world in nuclear fire.
Yeah, if that was your intention, I think you could get it done.
Honestly, I think I might have a Kickstarter. Hey, everybody, give me $500,000 and I will drag the world into nuclear fire.
I believe this is going to be called Project Phoenix.
We really are going to have a bunker for our politics.
This bunker, it turns out, was ideal. Sorry, Marissa.
So, yeah, for $140,000, Bob Dole helped destabilize global politics.
And so, moving on a little bit, this one's just more in Trump being great at getting headlines when nothing's actually happening. So he claimed a $50 billion investment from SoftBank and posted on Twitter that they wouldn't have made this investment had Trump not been elected. And it seems that part of the way they're able to do this is that SoftBank, whose CEO is Masayoshi Son, is going along with this. They literally showed a slide that was like, now we're going to invest $50 billion, when it was, by all accounts, an investment that was made more or less a year ago. Like, this was something that was going to happen regardless, and they were willing to play along with Trump, give him some headlines, and in exchange, who knows? Maybe there's some regulatory issues that come up later that SoftBank doesn't have problems with, that maybe they should have had problems with.
There is a lot of... The amount of grift that is already happening is terrifying.
And we shouldn't
I believe that Ivanka, while she was the fact that the children are involved is fucking terrifying, but while Ivanka was on the call with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, she was also finalizing a deal with Japanese clothing giant Sanbei. Yeah. So the amount of interconnected corporate political grift that is already happening is incredibly terrifying.
And it's incredibly terrifying, but it shouldn't be incredibly surprising, and not just because of the lack of ethics in you know, Trump's presidency, but because there are kleptocracies all over the world, and they know exactly what the playbook is. Like, now they've become aware that they're now open and available to this kind of deal-making and manipulation, and, you know, it's not anything new to a lot of these companies. It's just how business is done in other countries around the world.
Yeah. Basically, every other country you go to, you have to have a discrete part of your budget allocated to bribes. And now, we have truly joined the global community.
Yeah, finally, you know what? Finally, we're not expressing this American imperialism. Finally, we're doing stuff the way that everybody else is around the world. We're truly becoming... This is the result of globalization, everybody.
That's my favorite part. All of these fucking stupid people who are like, we're not gonna... All the all of the liberals who were like, we're not voting for Hillary because of globalization. It's like, you fucking idiots. What do you think? What do you think is going to happen? He's just going to take the United States out of the global economy where there's so much money to be made for him. The conservatives at this point, I'm just like, you all attached whatever your stupid hopes were going to be onto this guy. So it's like, yeah, of course you were going to vote for this guy who makes a ton of fucking stupid promises he's not going to keep. You're not smart about it. But no. All of the people who are like, we're not going to vote for Hillary because globalization is destroying us. It's like, motherfucker, if you're a liberal, you vote for the liberal candidate. That's the only way they win. I still don't understand how people haven't grasped that if you vote for a person, they are more likely to win. And if you don't vote for them, they are less likely to win. I have this fucking essay I need to write about the fun industrial complex where everybody needs everything to be fucking fun. Everything needs things to be fun and enlightening and positive. And motherfucker, sometimes things aren't fun. Politics aren't supposed to be fun. Politics are supposed to be the machinations of how governments interact with the people and with other governments. It's not supposed to be a fucking trip to the amusement park. It's politics.
I have such a violent reaction to people who say negative things about incremental change because that's the only kind of change that's ever going to happen. And it's
motherfucker,
like,
8 years ago, gay people couldn't get married.
Yeah, it's like we are making progress, and people who just who throw that all away because they're not satisfied with the rate of change, go fuck yourself. Change is going to be real fucking incremental now. I think I saw that in a Frank Luntz tweet, but
fucking, and I hate that Frank Luntz too.
I like Frank Luntz.
I hate him.
Well, let me slightly possible note of optimism, and I know that's not our tone, but so in an interview with Time Magazine I'm not even going to get into why he was being interviewed by Time Magazine. Not going to talk about it. He signaled that he might be opening to keeping the Dreamers and people who are kept here under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, aka DACA, might be okay with keeping them here. So the quote was, we're going to work something out that's going to make people very happy and proud. They got brought here at a very young age. They've worked here. They've gone to school here. Some are good students. Some have wonderful jobs. And they're in Never Never Land because they don't know what's going to happen. And this could also be like he's done before, where he just sort of signals a possible change and then sees how much people freak out. And if people freak out enough, then he doesn't actually do it. But I'm hoping for those people who are affected by that it is, it's just a positive signal that things might go that direction. And so that was something I wanted to bring up.
I also think that with California being as adamant as it is about not being willing to work with ICE to deport people, I don't think that he wants to fuck with California too much. Because you got to remember, California has a lot of power.
They've got some power.
Yeah. And if you are going to start a civil war, trying to get California to deport Latinos is a very dumb reason to start that civil war.
Yeah, it seems pretty low on the list.
Yeah. So also, we've said this before. He was a greasy liberal before he was a greasy conservative.
Exactly.
The thing about most of his views, he doesn't believe in them. I don't think he believes in basically anything except making money for himself and gaining power and adding to his ego. But really, all of his political views are basically completely bankrupt and counterfeit.
He is not an ideologue. He's basically the Plinko president.
He really is. So I think that a lot of the more ultra-conservative stuff that he said is probably not going to happen just because it would detract from what he really wants to do, which is just make money for himself.
Yeah, that is his number one goal in life, his number one dream.
And he's doing a great job of it. I got to give the man credit. He is really doing a great job of immediately being kleptocrat.
To make money for himself and force everyone in the country to swear that they love him.
That's really, honestly, I feel like if we just like gave him like $1 billion and told him we loved him, he'd just go away.
I think, I mean, there's at one point where, do you remember in the election, somebody asked for $5 billion, would he stop his campaign? And he was like, I'd have to think about it.
Because he would in a second.
Right. And I was like, now that seems cheap. Like, what were we thinking?
Listen, everybody, $5 billion might seem a lot, but if you give me $500,000, I swear to God those bombs will drop. We will see who will truly be the king of the roaches. It's me.
Cabinet updates. We've got three past the one that we already talked about.
Who do you want to... Go ahead, because these are so bugfuck.
Well, so one we've sort of expected for a while, but they finally made the announcement. Ben Carson as the next Secretary of Department of Housing and Urban Development.
He thinks that the Department of Housing and Urban Development is in charge of black people because it has the word urban in it.
I heard a news piece on the – there's like if Ben Carson is just completely absentee, we have a model for what that looks like. There was a Secretary of Housing and Urban Development during the Reagan administration who was famously incompetent and was known for watching soap operas in his office during the day. And there was so much corruption. This is my amazing thing. There was a ton of corruption and kleptocracy and just stealing among the people. Many of his understaffers gave each other grants. That's a real thing that happened. And amazingly, the man whose name I forgot to look up because I didn't think I was going to be talking about this. He was not convicted of anything because the investigator completely believed that he had no idea any of this was going on because he was that incompetent.
By the way, Ben Carson, no experience in any sort of housing and urban development field. Zero experience.
If he was the...
They said he had experience because he grew up in public housing. He didn't grow up in public housing.
He didn't? I saw that.
No!
Line.
No!
Oh, no. Oh, no. I just assumed that was true. I was tricked.
No, that's how they get you.
Oh, they did get me.
Dude.
They've gotten me.
Do you remember during the debates when every time somebody would say the word urban and Trump thought they were talking about black people?
He thinks
that the HUD is in charge of black people, so that's why he put Ben Carson in charge of them.
I mean, in his defense, he's been misled by a myriad of Comedy Club Tuesday nights.
It always is Tuesday, isn't it? Oh my God! It's always Tuesday!
It's urban comedy night, friend.
Oh, God. That's some sad-ass fucking memories.
We have General James Mattis as the Secretary of Defense. He's a retired U.S. Marine Corps general. He goes by the comforting nickname of Mad Dog. He has said he has said that responding to, quote, political Islam is the major security issue facing the United States.
Who we don't even know if he can legally be appointed yet, because I believe that there is supposed to be a 7-year gap between retiring from the military and going to, you know, be appointed to this cabinet.
Right.
Yeah. So we don't know if that's a done deal. They're trying to push that fucking waiver through.
And that's something that does have to be approved by the Senate. So,
yeah,
I mean, this could be a rough time.
And here's the thing. Civilian control of the military is very important.
It's a big deal. I definitely much preferred when the Secretary of Defense thought that climate change was the number one security concern.
we'll get into that, but oof, it's going to be. It's going to be.
And number three, Scott Pruitt has been chosen to lead the EPA. Scott Pruitt.
Who has repeatedly sued the EPA.
Who has called global warming a hoax and called Obama's clean power plan the war on coal. It was a negative thing.
We're all dead. That's all there is to it at this point.
And that's been the cabinet updates.
Oh, and we haven't even gotten into the Flynn boys. The Flynn boys are back at it again.
I don't understand the relationship. So there's Major
Flynn.
It's
a son. It's a son who's also his chief of staff.
Yeah. His son got fired.
Yeah. I mean, as much as anybody can get fired by the fucking Trump campaign. We all remember when old Corey fucking grab a woman and throw her to the floor Lewandowski got fucking fired, and then he immediately became the campaign's mouthpiece on fucking CNN. Jeff Zucker, you fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, so...
So, shall I explain Pizzagate?
Yeah, so I want to say... I have no idea what Pizzagate is. I'm about to learn with the listeners, because there's a lot of news that comes by, and once in a while, a scandal has such a ridiculous name that you're like, I don't need to know about that, when maybe you need to know about that.
Okay, so, I will preface this by saying, this is a conspiracy theory pushed by Alex Jones, which has absolutely zero credibility, zero root in any sort of truth. It is as much a tremendous... terrible, awful lie as a person can perpetrate. So, there is a pizzeria called Comet Ping Pong in Washington, D.C.
This is already ridiculous. Comet Ping
what
Pong.
Pizzagate believes is that John Podesta and Hillary Clinton operate a child sex trafficking ring out of the back room of this Washington, D.C. pizza place.
No, they don't believe that.
That is absolutely what they believe. And a 28-year-old gentleman from North Carolina walked in there with an AR-15 assault rifle to self-investigate, as he said.
No, wait. So you're saying that's a real thing that happened?
Somebody yes, that is the real. That is the real thing that happened.
Okay, so I need to separate real from fake here because there's a lot of things happening.
The child sex tracking ring, fake. The guy walking into, and I love that they keep quoting what he said, which was self-investigate.
Yeah, which it sounds like something you should not be able to do in public.
No. So he walked in there with an AR-15 assault rifle, which, by the way, is the same fucking one that is generally used in mass shootings. I believe he fired a shot inside of the pizza place. He did not kill anybody, but he actually took a look around the back rooms and was satisfied that there was not a child sex trafficking ring happening back there. And then he was very quickly arrested. And here's what's great. All of his old buddies on the Pizzagate forums think that he's a crisis actor.
Of course they do. What other outcome could there be? Well, now I want to see an updated interview with this guy.
If you are not aware what a crisis actor is, you're very lucky, first of all. A crisis actor is what conspiracy theorists believe is an actor... or any random person who is paid to appear at the site of a tragedy or crisis and act bereaved. There are a lot of people who still believe that Sandy Hook, the Sandy Hook school shooting, was a
false flag,
which if you don't know what a false flag is,
good.
You're so lucky. You're so lucky, you little Summer's child. You... fucking little beautiful egg. I wish you all the luck in the world to not know these things. But these are the true terms that these conspiracy theorists fucking believe. The fact that Alex Jones has a direct ear to the White House is chilling. It truly is. And also, fucking... it was not so long ago that all of the people going like, go to InfoWars, go to Prison Planet, we're all fucking lefties. Fucking psycho lefties, but lefties nonetheless. And these people just fucking just I can't even say they sold out their beliefs because they don't believe in anything because they're fucking nut job conspiracy theorists. But this is America, $500,000. That's all it takes, and I promise a cleansing wave of nuclear fire. So, Pizzagate. Conspiracy theory about Hillary and Podesta running a child sex trafficking ring out of a Washington, D.C. pizza place. A guy came in with an assault rifle. No one was killed, but that is what fake news causes. And so, the son of Michael Flynn, who is... who? What is he fucking... is he the NSA
head? Oh, I forgot.
Is he anyway, get fucking on, stupid Michael Flynn, who, by the way, you want to hear a chilling quote. He had a meeting with all of his new employees, and he said, "The first thing you need to know is that I am always right, and you will know that you are right when your views meld to my own."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see a problem with that.
We're all fucked. So that guy's son, who is also part of his chief, he is his chief of staff and was part of the official Trump transition team, was retweeting white supremacist and articles about Pizzagate. And he got into a fight with Jake Tapper of CNN over Pizzagate in DMs, which, by the way, Twitter is the fucking worst. And I hate everything. Twitter is the worst. I hate everything. I can't believe what our nation has, I want to say, lowered itself to, but it was always this way.
So he accepted the position of National Security Advisor.
We're all fucked!
So I want to, something that I've been thinking of, that brings us to the end of the cabinet updates for this week. Something that I had been talking about a lot with my friends, I don't know if you thought about it at all, is just one of the most impotent things, but I can't stop myself from thinking about, is candidates for Democratic candidate in 2020.
First of all, you're assuming that there's going to be a United States in 2020.
I'm assuming there's going to be an Earth in 2020, that we won't just be a burned out husk, that we won't have been destroyed like Alderaan.
I would love it if a fucking rival civilization blew up this planet. If anything, just because I don't want it to be us who kills ourselves.
It's nice having somebody else to blame.
It really is.
Was it Trump? You'd think so, but no.
No, it was the aliens. Thank God.
It was the space. Honestly, it was the space British.
I know that you haven't read Watchmen.
I'm
still waiting for that. I'm waiting for that fucking squid to hit New York City.
It's going
to
happen.
Can you honestly say that it can't happen at this point?
No, I certainly can't. And so, in thinking about candidates for 2020, like, certain things that I've thought about, as I am somebody who loves numbers. I love, you know, sort of policy focus, and a lot of candidates that people find very boring, I've been okay with. I've been a huge Hillary Clinton advocate, even in, if you've seen my stand-up, you know, I've said I've been a Hillary supporter since 2008 when there were better options. I like her a lot as a candidate, but this election has made me admit that it's not negotiable. A candidate has to be inspiring. You have to be able to drive out the vote in a way that, you know, I hoped wasn't necessary, because I still believe Hillary Clinton would have been a great president, but I do think she was a flawed candidate. And that, by the way, I'm not saying that as a blame. I'm saying that makes me sad as a country that she is a candidate that could not get elected. But when I'm looking forward to candidates who can get elected in the United States, like, the ability to inspire is non-negotiable for me anymore. Like, I don't, specifically, I don't want a John Kerry or a Mitt Romney, who could be the same person for all I know, who are just boring pieces of cardboard who look like a president. Like, that's not when I think about electability, which is a thing that matters to me, I'm thinking about somebody who can inspire people to come out and vote. That is what I'm thinking about. And so the first person you have to bring up, you know, where it's 2 years from when the next election starts, is Elizabeth Warren. Has to be a front runner. Experienced senator, advocate for the working class, great public speaker, tons of domestic experience. I think she has to be your early favorite for the Democratic nominee in 2020.
People have dinged her for not having foreign policy experience. Fucking anybody can fucking get enough foreign policy advice to be able to effectively function. That's not something that truly concerns me about her. I don't think that there is any real problem with Elizabeth Warren, except for the fact that she has repeatedly stated that she does not want to run for president. Another problem with getting a good presidential candidate is it is a terrible, unforgiving job that ages you horribly and exposes you to all of the worst that humanity has to offer. You have to be a very specific kind of person to want to be president. And we got a perfect example of it. We got a person who is an experienced career politician who, if anything, cares too much about certain things versus a fucking guy who doesn't give a shit about anything but himself and just says whatever the fuck. Those are the basically the two opposite poles of people who want to be president.
So, but I don't understand the point that you're making about Elizabeth Warren.
She doesn't want to fucking be president. She keeps saying she doesn't want to be president. So right now,
I don't believe
the person. Here's the thing, though. I feel like Elizabeth Warren is going to see how fucking shitty this goddamn Trump administration is going to be, and is going to basically be inspired by its terribleness to want to run. Because I think Biden is fucking too old. Bernie's too fucking old. Clinton, she's not gonna fucking do this again.
No, Clinton's not gonna do this again. Bernie's gonna be 79 in 2020. I'm just saying that's too old. It's too old to be president. Elizabeth Warren's not gonna be young. She's gonna be 72 in 2020. But I think that she's still able to do it. Also, she looks better than I do right now.
She truly does.
She looks phenomenal. But here, what I think about Elizabeth Warren, and I believe this honestly, is that saying that she doesn't want to be president was the only way to get people to stop about talking about her being president. I'm sure the Clinton campaign talked to her and they agreed that she was not going to be running for president that year. I don't think we actually have any insight as to whether or not she wants to be president going forward. So and it may be possible that she actually does, but 2020 is the first time I think we'll be able to figure that out for real. Mm-hmm. Also, I will say that the international policy, if before this election, that would have been a disqualifier for me. I was turned off by the fact that basically she's like, what do you know about other countries? And she's like, I don't know. Israel seems pretty good. And that's about all she's ever said, which was very concerning to me at the time. But at this point, I mean, you can, you know, get international advisors that you know and trust. And her domestic policies second to none. And getting Trump out is the number one priority. Like, anything's better than a fire-breathing monster.
It truly is. By the way, have you read up on anything about all of this stuff going on with Keith Ellison's run for head of the DNC?
I haven't, but before you get into
that, let me tell
you,
before you get into that, they're trying to paint him as an anti-Semite, and it's not looking good. I don't think that he is. You know, they're going off of his association with fucking Louis Farrakhan. And if you weren't associating with Louis Farrakhan in the 90s, you weren't really involved in black politics.
The DNC and the RNC aren't particularly powerful organizations. Like, I just don't care. I just don't care.
Oh, no, I think it's important because the Democrats took a hit by having Debbie Wasserman Schultz in there, who, not great. That lady... Oof, she was trying to hamstring Bernie at all points, which you can argue that Bernie was an outsider who really had no business running for the Democratic primaries. But yeah, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz as DNC was definitely a fucking publicity negative for the Democrats. So getting in someone new.
Negative. I honestly don't think it's that big of a deal. I think it's overblown how much power the DNC has. I mean, Rince Priebus as being heads of the Republican shows you how little power they have. I mean, he basically got steamrolled by Trump and then became his biggest advocate because that's what you do as the head of that organization. I don't care one way or the other who's the head of the DNC. Keith Ellison seems fine. They are trying to paint him as being an anti-Semite. If he's not, I hope he gets the job.
Yeah, he was basically like, yeah, sometimes American politics are too beholden to Israel's interest. And a bunch of people were like, oh, you anti-Semite. And it's like, motherfucker, he's kind of right.
Julian Castro? Julian? I actually don't know how he prefers his name to be pronounced.
I would say Julian.
Julian Castro, he is from Texas, has so many tangibles in his favor. He is from Texas. He is the current Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. He's good looking. And here's the thing about Julian Castro. He is young, which I don't care. He is a weird speaker. That's what I'm going to say about him.
I've seen him. I believe I saw him speak at the big convention, the Democratic convention, and he comes off a little odd.
My first pass check for all of these candidates was to go on YouTube and watch several of their speeches. And Julian Castro, the first thing that I was reminded of, if you don't remember, in 2012, I guess it would have been, that Bobby Jindal was like a big guy that everybody was talking about.
Bobby Jindal. He flamed out.
Well, he flamed out hard and immediately, and the way he did is they gave him a primetime speaking position as the Republican sponsor to the State of the Union, and he was a dumb, uninspiring piece of cardboard. People just literally looked at all his credentials, and they were like, it's Republican Obama! He's not white! He's a guy, he's young, and it turns out, yeah, except he's not great at actually speaking. Now, Julian Castro, I think, is much better than Bobby Jindal was on all of those aspects. But I don't think he's great, and I don't think he's the guy who's going to be able to take Trump down. I don't have any major negatives for him. I'd still prefer him to Trump, but he's not the guy that I would throw out first.
I think he's great vice presidential material.
Yeah. I think he'd be great.
Because I feel like Elizabeth Warren, Julian Castro, one of the complaints about the Clinton-Kane ticket was that it was way too white, which I think is a valid complaint, and this would shore up those complaints.
Sure. Yeah. I think it would have been a great VP this time around. Next one I want to talk about is Kamala Harris.
Homegrown. She is a San Francisco politics person.
I mean, if you want somebody who I feel like actually does fit into the next Obama as much as anybody could, which is, you know, a non thing, but a first term African American senator who's a groundbreaking orator, a previous California attorney general, I think she's wonderful. And for her, the big thing is she does not have the exposure at this point, and it would be up to the DNC to really get her in the limelight over the next 4 years. If they decide that that's what they're going to do. And she's great. I think also just having not a lot of history to her makes her much easier to get across in this political environment. You know, I have to say, after this last election, I'm turned off by people with baggage, whether or not I should be.
That's the thing. We have to – the aim now has to be people who – and this is the fucking law of diminished expectations. You have to be fucking bulletproof as a Democrat now. You cannot have one single controversy that can be twigged in any way to be a confusing emails style fucking fake attack that basically takes you down.
And I do want to talk about
the problem with emails. Nobody really – people just said emails, but they couldn't explain why it was bad per se.
Right.
It just became a catchphrase to use against her. And you can't let those motherfuckers have those catchphrases anymore.
No.
It's fucking – this was truly the catchphrase campaign.
And the last person that I want to talk about that I've been looking at is Michelle Obama, who
could not be further above the fucking fray, has stated so many times that she did not want fucking Barack to run, who has just held this barely veiled disgust at national politics, and she's right. I cannot say that Michelle Obama has not been right about literally fucking everything. The amount of shit they have given this woman, who is brilliant. I do not think that we can overestimate how Michelle Obama has been one of the most decorated, prestigious first ladies that there has ever been. She's fucking Hillary style. She's fucking a great, accomplished fucking lawyer. She has done great work, and she has had to sideline a lot of that to be fucking first lady.
And I think you've pointed out all the reasons why I don't want her to run as the next Democratic candidate. I mean, do I think she'd be a great candidate? Yes. But first of all, to quote Guy Branum, America shouldn't have dynasties. But secondly, I think there's just too many parallels to Hillary Clinton. There's so much baggage there. And also, Obama is literally a curse word in some states, mm-hmm. which is just something that I don't want to have to overcome in the 2020 election. Is that unfair? Yes. Horribly so. Do I think she should never run for office? No, she's very young. I could see it being a reasonable thing in the future, but would not be my first choice for candidate. Now, that being said, if she got nominated, I would support her fully.
I don't want her to run for president. I want her to be appointed to the Supreme Court.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, because that's something that she is more than fucking qualified to, you know, be on.
I want Ivanka Trump to be on the Supreme Court. I want Trump's megalomania.
He'll try. He'll fucking try. You know he'll try.
People forget that like 100 years ago, you didn't have to be like a lawyer. Like you just pick people. You had like governors.
You're like, oh, my horse is pretty fucking good. I'll fucking appoint him to be a judge.
Yeah. But I think Ivanka Trump would probably be a great liberal judge. No, I think it'd be great. I honestly, given all the other ones, that's my favorite one. That's my favorite person that...
Of all the bad choices, she's certainly the least bad choice.
That's what I'm saying. And I think she would end up being a very good choice.
That America has truly being faced with hoping for the least bad choice of all the bad choices.
And I think we're down to our last two weekly segments.
We didn't even get to talk about the fucking... We didn't get to talk about the Dakota Access Pipeline, which that... Okay.
Well, so, that ended well.
Quick summary.
We're not about good news.
Well, we don't know it quite ended well yet. The Dakota Access Pipeline, the easement to be built onto the federal land was denied. So that is a victory, albeit possibly a temporary victory, which Dakota Access has also said it is not going to pay attention to and has just continued drilling. So that's still a fucking problem. And also, I believe a North Dakota GOP official was basically like, yeah, when Trump's in office, we're going to try this again and it's going to happen. So,
well, sure. It's. I didn't expect it to be over at this point, given the billions of dollars invested up to this point. I didn't think they'd be like, you guys were right.
But yeah, so that's a temporary victory, albeit it is a victory. God, what else was there? I think we can talk about the Oakland fire when it comes to the donation section.
Yes. So, journalist to follow. Do you want to go first, or I can go first?
I'm going to go first. I'm going to follow this up with somebody who is a mutual favorite of me and Red.
Oh, yeah.
Sarah Jeong, who, if you haven't been following her, everybody needs to check out her live tweeting of the Google Oracle court case. It might be one of the best things to come out of Twitter. It gave us so much. It gave us an API is like a hamburger.
Mm.
That's one of my favorites. It gave us the file cabinet. I was a big fan of the file cabinet. The file cabinet was one of my favorite characters. Judge Alsup, who, there's a fucking good judge. That guy was on point throughout the entire fucking trial. There was the Silicon Valley bar mitzvahs. Oh, that... Great tweets, great journalist, also fucking very funny. She's participated in Shipwreck a bunch of times.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the competitive erotic fan fiction tournament hosted by my good friends at the Booksmith. So yeah, you can follow her. I believe it is just her name.
It's at Sarah Jeong, which is that Sarah with an H, and the last name is spelled J-E-O-N-G.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, follow her. She's fucking... Does great tweets, does great reporting, good jokes. Great person to follow on Twitter.
I would say follow Claire Malone. She's a senior political writer for 538, formerly The New Yorker, and did a ton of, unlike most of 538, she did a ton of on-the-ground reporting for them. And I particularly find her piece from July of this year, The End of a Republican Party, to be enlightening. The article unveils a lot of trends that end up being defining in this election. Obviously, she didn't get... she didn't foresee 100% of what was going to happen, but you see the she sort of documents the tilt from a lot of traditional Republican issues to I don't like brown people,
boy did it tilt to that,
and it's fascinating. So follow her on Twitter at Claire Malone. That's C-L-A-R-E-M-A-L-O-N-E. And lastly, a charity to donate to.
I think we've both got the same one.
Yeah.
Some of you might know an Oakland warehouse, which was hosting a party, caught on fire, and a lot of people died. It is very tragic, and I do, you know, we personally, you know, I'm speaking for Red here, but we personally do not know anybody who died in that fire, but you cannot have lived in the Bay Area without knowing somebody who knew somebody.
Right.
So we put the youcaring.com link in the show notes. Please give, because this is a pretty rough tragedy. And as, you know, as a pair of San Francisco Bay Area performers, we personally have been in a lot of places that, you know,
yeah,
didn't have all their permits.
No. I mean, for these kind of artists, there aren't other venues. Like, there aren't other places that it's the choice between these shows existing and not existing. So
exactly.
So please donate and help them out.
Yeah.
And I think that's been our episode this week. Follow us on Twitter at @BoysGoreSwords. You can follow Ivan on Twitter at @Ivan_Hernandez.
And you can find Red on Twitter at @Red_Scott.
Bye.
See ya.